When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Binge Down? Welcome back to Season 2's final coverage of Amazon's Invincible. Today, we're going to be going over Episode 7 and Episode 8, so the last two that just came out within the last week. And there's so much to talk about that I'm going to keep this intro part brief, but this show's a damn near 10 out of 10. If it's not the best written cartoon show of all time, it's approaching that level, and maybe by season three it will hit that level for me. But I am floored by how good the writing team is. And I know it's all based on the source material, which is such an advantage. So maybe I'm really indirectly just giving a shout out to the Invincible comic, but there's almost no way I'm lasting between now and when season three comes out without reading. So by the next time we talk about this, like, I just am craving more information, and I just know that this show just does not disappoint. And this is still the warm-up of the full Invincible story, and it just makes me question, like, how the hell season 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are just going to keep on topping this, because the reception around the internet, besides the big gap period that we have, has been pretty damn impressive. Like, everybody's loving it. I'm loving it. Miyu and Aoki talk about it constantly. Just give me your initial thought, because these two episodes blew my mind. They were incredible.
Well, yeah, you did admit after watching the episode that you were going to go immediately into the comics. And I'm pissed because I don't want you to. I want us to all have the same reactions. But obviously, obviously, I can't hold you back from that. I really want to read it as well. This season was phenomenal. Just another 10 out of 10. Me and Luke jokingly the other day were just like asking each other, oh, you know, what are the best stories in television history? And, you know, we obviously mentioned the Game of Thrones and like
One Piece,
Breaking Bad's, things like that. And I jokingly said Invincible, but it was like a half joke because the show just tells a phenomenal story. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I mean, I just can't wait long enough for season three. I know that they're, with the anticipation that season two has caused, especially with the break in the middle, they're seeming to be more diligent about getting content out, which is a good thing. It doesn't seem like we'll be waiting all that long in between seasons. So definitely extremely excited for that. I saw like that people for the most part thought episode 7 was like one of the quote unquote worst episodes of Invincible,
really?
Which I was definitely surprised about. Like, I was reading recap reviews and a lot of them were kind of in the same bucket of like, this wasn't that great of an episode. And I beg to differ. I honestly thought it was one of my favorites of all of Invincible. Episode 8 was obviously incredible too. Not much happens besides the fight between him and Angstrom, but I was just surprised to see that people thought 7 was that bad. Not that they thought it was bad, obviously. They just thought it was the weakest of all the episodes. And I definitely disagreed.
I hard disagree. And I have a very specific reason. And maybe like I am out of touch with the community on this one, and this is a hot take, but I thought, and forgive my pronunciation, Anissa. Is that her name?
Anissa.
It's not. I thought it was Anissa, but I think it's Anissa after rewatching it. I'm going to go with Anissa, who is also voiced by Billy Butcher's wife's actor.
Oh, awesome.
If we didn't know that, which
two great comic book hero shows.
Yep, exactly. I think Anissa is one of my favorite like characters of the entire show. Level of tension. Like, I am glued to the screen more for her so far with her interactions she's done on Earth than Krieg. And I know that might be down the line change, but right now, Anissa is...
I thought you were going to say Omni-Man, and I was going to I was going to argue a little bit, but no, I would agree definitely with Krieg, and Krieg is still very interesting for both of us.
But dude, like Anissa threatening Amber.
Introduction.
Ooh, I was like, this is incredible.
Her introduction was incredible, and I am surprised that people weren't more receptive of it. I think they thought maybe the first half was where everything kind of was slow. I thought... People actually were complaining about the convention scene, about them breaking the fourth wall. I was like,
we're going to talk about that. Yeah, like, that's like the first scene we're going to get.
Yeah, we can get into it. But I was just surprised. I think people are getting to the point where they're harshly critiquing the show now.
Just
and now they're nitpicking
things.
Yeah. And then now they're nitpicking. I loved the convention scene, but we can go ahead and certainly get into it here.
My last comment, and then we can jump into things, are I was really sad that we didn't get to see the twins through any part of this back. Like, not, you know.
Oh, yeah, the Maulers. Yeah, I know you're a big fan of them, so.
there's going to be more random things we'll be talking about. I'm sure we're going to end this podcast with a top three character, so keep that in the back of your head. But for now, we're going to jump into breaking down episode 7 called I'm Not Going Anywhere. And of course, that's going to be related to Mark and Anissa. So I love all this stuff. So let's just start with the Guardians, because they're pretty isolated in this for a huge part of this until the very end when Duplicate has her whole reveal. But at least in the beginning of episode 7, there's just this tension that's been building between Monster Girl and Rudy the Robot that has been bubbling for most of this season. We get some of that here. She's testing out her her drone version of the monster itself, and she's like hating it. She just wants to be able to use her powers, not think about the curse that makes her younger all the time. And at the same time, we have all this commentary from the peanut gallery of the two most useless guardians, in my opinion, of Bulletproof and Black Samson. Black Samson, I'll say, is like a great leadership role and like he's empathetic. Bulletproof, I think, is just like he's just sitting there talking shit on the guardians, and he's been useless for as long as I've been paying attention to him. So I didn't like the vibe that he was trying to set there, but Samson defends it. But those are just these couple of scenes here. And
Bulletproof just seems a little wet behind the ears. Like he doesn't have enough experiences with being in a team like this that it feels like he has anything valid to say. Like it's just all complaints at this point, which of course, if this is your first time being a part of a team, which I don't know for a fact it is, but I'm assuming just through his actions that it is. And he obviously has issues with everyone, and I get that, but you're saving the world at the end of the day. You kind of got to work with what you got here, especially at the stakes that we're dealing with here. Don't really care too much, honestly, about Robot and Monster Girl. It's interesting from the perspective of, okay, he used to be a robot and she's a cursed girl who has this ability that makes her younger. So the dynamic there is unique and I won't say interesting, it's unique. Mm-hmm. I just am not a love story kind of guy. Like once things start maybe hitting the fan for the relationship, like real bad, like we obviously got some tension in episode 7 a little bit. But once it really starts hitting the fan, I don't really think I'm too invested in this story.
Yeah, and they have in the next episode, episode 8, they have their makeup after this little fight. I think it's one. It's not that it's bad. It's just compared to everything else that's happening, right. It's boring. It's still like the Debbie stuff from the first half of the season where we were kind of just saying it's not poorly written. It's just who cares when there's so many other things.
And Debbie obviously got a bump in her character importance because of Oliver. So.
Yes. We got a couple of checklist items that happened for us in the second half, especially with the Amber.
I'm going to make the same comments about Rick and William, pretty much the same comments of I don't really care too much. Yeah. It's just at that lull stale point in the relationship that things are just averagely rocky.
Yeah,
and they're going to work things out. But once those stories get more intense, I'll be more invested. But for right now, they're just simmering and it's not really piquing my interest.
Yeah, it's just like it's a seed planting thing that's going to pay off in a season or
right,
two, whatever
exactly.
It is. The only other thing that happens between the Guardians that doesn't directly involve Mark or Cecil is Immortal in the episode 7 is freaking out, like, because he's just like mentally breaking down because of all the duplicate stuff. Like he freaked out at Alan at the end of last episode. So he wants to retire and he tells Cecil this, who Cecil just basically says no and just forces him to go on a mandatory vacation. And while he's going to be gone, Rudy's going to be given temporary leadership again. So anything else there?
No, I just, at first I wasn't crazy about Immortal being like this, especially when Cecil had already offered the idea of a vacation, and then Immortal backfires by saying, no, I'm not going on a vacation. And then he thinks on it and he's like, I want to quit. Mm-hmm. I wasn't too crazy on it, but then you got to think about it. Mortals live forever, and these are all new feelings for him. Even though he's been around thousands of years, he's never really fully experienced love, it seems like, been in a relationship. And I just kind of overlook those things when thinking on his actions here. Mm-hmm. Still love the Immortal character. At first, I was a little like, okay, this guy's just being a big baby right now. But you got to really do think about it in terms of how long he's lived and that these are all just new experiences for him and he doesn't know how to process that.
And season 2 has made me a huge Immortal fan. So while I am agreeing with you that it's a boring part of these two episodes compared to everything else, again, like Rudy and Monster Girl, I just like seeing the Immortal more than any of those other three characters.
Oh, it picks immediately back up in episode 8.
Yeah, and then that'll be the last thing we talk about with the Guardians. But Let me put a pause there. We'll jump back because a lot happens in between that, because that's like the final, I think,
yeah,
that might be
like
the post-credit scene of episode seven, or it's the final scene of episode
it's
eight
one of the final scenes of
the post credits. I have all my notes mixed, so it's kind of tough to tell. But anyway, we're going to flow through all of Mark's storyline now. That's going to basically lead until Angstrom, and then we're going to take a break from him. So this is everything. Like, this is all of our main plot here. We have Mark and Amber starting off episode seven. This is the scene you were already hinting at. They're trying to save their relationship after they both got advice from their friends in the last episode. So we go to this. Did they say Comic-Con, or is it not? It's not Comic-Con. It's just like a convention.
I think a convention. I didn't write down what they exactly call it.
Either way, it's a convention, and it gives Mark and Amber time to be a normal couple for a little bit. But I thought one of the most creatively written scenes I've seen in a long time, with a fourth wall break here, is Mark going to get an autograph from the creator of Seance Dog, who that's all linked to the Thraxian fake out from the earlier part of this season. But dude, this fourth wall break was so good for me. They talk about how animation takes a while because they're trying to do this commentary that it takes a little bit to put out the Invincible episode. So everybody's got to calm down a little bit. They're going to use these sort of tricks where they have mouth off camera. The camera's behind who's speaking, so you don't see them talking. You get the wide shots where nothing's actually animated, and you have the funny art change when he's like, yeah, sometimes the artists get a little weird and they make it look like a completely different show. All these things are just happening and they're flashing. I thought it was hilarious. We were laughing out loud. But the funny line that ends the conversation is Mark says, wow, I'm really going to pay attention to season two way closer now. So it's just like it's just a great fourth wall break.
How do people complain about that? It's so enjoyable. It's fun. Who cares if it's cheesy? I thought they did this perfectly. Like, where else are you going to introduce like a fourth wall like this? Where else other than a Comic-Con? You know, it's perfect. I love the you see a little Naruto shout out in the background. Some of the characters are dressed like
headband, right?
I'm pretty sure I saw Johnny Depp, Pirates of the Caribbean,
amazing.
Captain Jack Sparrow at some point. Yeah, it's cool, man. Why do people complain about things? I don't get it.
No, it was so funny, and then that's probably just like super deep in the community as like an inside joke that I think happens in the comic. Like, people were putting side by sides, I thought I saw, but either way, I thought it was hilarious. We don't need to talk more about it, but naturally, every time Mark and Amber try and have a normal relationship, something happens. And in this case, we get a call from Rex, we get a call from Eve, who's actually dealing with Kill Cannon, which like messed her up in the past, but whatever. She's too busy. She wants Mark to go and make sure Rex is fine, because he just got his new metal hand. He's just left the hospital early, and he's trying to fight an actual villain who we quickly pan over to, and it's Octoboss. So this is a really fun scene. Tell me what you thought about, our takeaways, things to bring up for Rex's return to action and Invincible coming and partially saving his ass.
Rex is slowly growing on me. I hate to admit it. It's fucking weird. I will give him his flowers here. I get it. He's going through a shitload of trauma, and he's trying to let it out and trying to feel like a big man by taking down this bigger villain that's clearly stronger than him and bigger than him. And he's trying to just fill that void that's left since he got his ass kicked and is missing half his brain. I think he can hold his own, man. I think the laser upgrade is honestly sick for him, to be honest.
The part of his hand, the metal,
the hand replaced, and it's the huge laser, whatever.
It reminds me of Genos from One Punch Man. I thought it was cool. And it was like, we commented on the Lizard League fight where he's like throwing those like the little cylinders that explode. Like, he does that here. He uses it as good as he can. He's still like a weaker tier character, but I agree with what you're saying. It's weird that I'm starting to like Rex a tiny bit.
It's because he's finally recognized that he's an asshole, that he was an asshole, and like, now he's
made up actually, with Eve.
Yeah, he's made up with Eve. Yeah. He's being a boy to Mark. Like, he's trying to improve himself and improve his powers. How can I hate a comeback story? You know, I can't root against him now. So
no, I agree.
We've come a long way from hating him in episode one, episode two, or whatever, season one.
Debbie, we've come a long way. Yeah. Rex, we've come a long way. Cecil, personally, we haven't talked about it yet much, but I've personally come a long way with Cecil as well. It's crazy. And even Amber was great this season compared to season one. Granted, her best scene's coming up soon. Yeah. But anyway, the other things that I took away from this scene, besides Octoboss like learning English in a shitty way, was kind of funny. I love that Rex canonized that Viltrumites grow their teeth back.
Yeah, that was, I must have missed that in our first watch, because I caught that the second I wrote that down.
So funny, because we always talk about, I know you love when Mark gets the shit kicked out of him all the time, and he's always missing teeth, and it's like, didn't have to explain it, but it's cool that Viltrumites can do that.
I wonder, it's probably only bone related, you think? Because like if they were missing a whole hand, like they're not getting that back. Like Nolan wasn't able to unparalyze himself from healing.
Yeah, probably not. I agree. There's probably
like
a limit.
It's a bone thing.
Yeah.
But still so cool that he gets to recover those lost teeth whenever he fights.
Yeah, definitely. I just like those little things. That's the kind of good writing that most shows just, why would you even throw that in there? But Invincible makes sure to clean up those little tiny things, and I love it.
Right.
But then the other part was just that, like you said, Rex and Mark are slowly becoming boys. It's weird. He's like, I'll cover for you, and the Guardians will cover for you next time you want to go on a real date with Amber.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's good.
He's a homie.
He's being a boy. Yeah, he's a boy right now. So just continuing along with Mark's storyline, he goes back to college now, and he's still, for some reason, stupidly set on going to college when he has so many other things to worry about. But of course, you have to tell this from the story of a growing young adult, and he wants to make it work still. So he goes in and talks to the dean, who we find out is now Dean Winslow from his high school.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a conversation we're going to have. But either way, the thing, all we know about the dean is that he's aware about Nolan dying. So he knows he's kind of giving Mark a second chance here to show it, like, that he cares about school because he knows that his father just died.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't know about Omni-Man as far as we explicitly know. And that's the conversation I want to get into,
mm-hmm.
is because you mentioned when we were rewatching, do you think there's a chance that Dean Winslow knows more or like is somehow connected to Cecil?
There's always a chance. I mean, I'm definitely team more of the belief that the dean is either working with Cecil or someone else and actually does know who Omni-Man was, that it was Mark's dad. It's just too much of a coincidence that, you know, he graduates high school expecting to leave all that stuff behind him, and he's, you know, looking for this fresh start at college, but his past is still catching up with him, and here's his dean from his high school that's now his college. Like, that is such a huge promotion, even in terms of like animated shows. This show is too carefully written to them not
to mean something.
Yeah, for them not to just explain, like, okay, how is this high school dean all of a sudden becoming the dean of a college? You know, so that's where I'm kind of at.
No, you actually just convinced me, because I was on the side where, why wouldn't he let on a little bit more to Mark that he knows about the bigger things that are going on? Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, what you're saying is more correct, where there's no coincidences. Why would they do that?
Yeah, it's not. And there wasn't even a good enough reason that he gave us, that he was just like, oh, yeah,
newspaper or something like that.
And it's like, I get that months have gone by, but like that process feels like it would still take much longer. And again, he just coincidentally is the dean of Mark's school. Like,
and what did I know? We suck at remembering this. Is it State University or something? Or it's like,
oh my God, don't even bother asking me that. I have no idea.
Never mind. Either way, State College, basically. Yeah. It's like a big school. Like, there's not, you're not just going to casually become the dean of it, is what I was just trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark's going to try and stick it out, and he's on probation, academic probation. You know about that?
Yeah. No, it was close probably sometimes, but no, I can't say I've ever officially been on
cross probation.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what I've been sprinting a little bit, because I really just want to talk about all this, where at the end of Mark and Amber kind of making up, like Mark tells her that he has a deal with Cecil, that he's going to get two nights off a week from being a hero, and the Guardians will take over so he can be normal with Amber. He's really trying to make it work. Of course he is. He's a good guy. But this all ends when they do their cute little date. They're flying through the water. They're flying around the city. They're just eating wherever they want. And they're freaking having dinner. And out of nowhere, with literally zero buildup, Anissa, a Viltrumite, just full on, just comes to their restaurant and puts her hand around Amber's neck. And I was just so excited. I felt like the tension level was there. Like, we were back, and it felt like a finale to me. Like, the level of tension she created just by existing and like saying two lines. She's like, if you could try and come at me, but I'll snap her neck before you get here. You can try that. Like, all this, all she wants to do is basically talk with Mark.
Yeah. We love the Viltrumite outfits. They are becoming, I throw this word around all the time on the podcast, but they're becoming iconic because it's just like, I see that white kind of like half dress looking, just battle armor suit, and I know that this person's just immediately a badass. They're like, Mark's gonna struggle with this person. This scene was just incredible. The following scenes that preceded it were just incredible.
You can loop it in, so if you want to just keep talking through, hit them going up in the sky
the
and talking
thing before I'll say is that Mark does see his mom Debbie to talk about the relationship that him and Amber go on. I think it's important, just because
Oh, you're right. I did miss that.
The only reason I want to bring it up is because who better to go to talk about this kind of relationship than your mom, who was actually in a relationship with someone who was the strongest person on earth, who was constantly away. So we get some insight there, which I do like. I think it is a perspective that not many superhero stories go into. So it's always interesting getting that perspective and Mark learning from his mom. And I hope that Mark holds on to his relationship a lot more going forward, because he has been reaching some dark points in his life that are kind of like make or break him being evil or good going forward. And I just hope that he can utilize his mom more as a person to talk to. But yeah, absolutely. I think he leaves to go get changed, and she even calls him out for that. She was like, "What took you so long?" And he's like, I just got to be ready for anything that goes down. And what makes Anissa so great to me is that granted, she was following orders, but she offers this perspective at the very beginning of their conversation about how your world only, Earth only has an 18% chance of
surviving. 200 years.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's not like she's willing right off the bat to just fight Mark, fuck up all these people to get her way for the Viltrumites. She understands what it means to sacrifice, maybe not sacrifice, but what it means to save people. And so it's not as evil as you think. I mean, it is evil because they're just running rampant throughout the universe and just killing whoever to get what they want. But
not giving people choices.
But yeah, here they're offering a choice. Mm-hmm. And it's just and coming from Anissa, it's just really cool to see, because with the last Viltrumites we saw, they just came down, just fucked up all the Thraxians. But here, Anissa, who Cecil even lists like 20 different options of defense that they have against her, and they're all useless.
Yep.
So we know for a fact Anissa could have came down and just blow up this planet if she really wanted to, and she doesn't. And that's what I think makes her so amazing as a villain. And she's a very
logical. She's definitely, but my question was going to be, do you think, is she just trying to play Mark, or is she mean all those things? Because like, if Mark says no, they're just going to do it anyway.
All Viltrumites genuinely believe what they're doing is a good thing. Like, it's like Thanos. Believe that Anissa, but they're all just so much more logical and think that in the point that they're willing to sacrifice thousands, millions for the benefit of billions.
They're looking at an equation, what saves more lives. They don't care how it's done, basically.
Yeah, but I feel like, and specifically for her though, that this is more brought out in this conversation than what we've seen with other Viltrumites interacting with Earth and Mark specifically.
I fell in love with Anissa because of this, as a character in this conversation, and
she can get it.
Well, some of the things that she goes on to say, it's throughout these next couple scenes, but just kind of going off the back of your comments, Viltrumites do not kill for pleasure, even though they sometimes take pleasure in killing. Which is just a great ass line. They won't kill you just to kill you.
And she is the one she's basically saying that I'm not the one that, you know, quote unquote, maybe takes pleasure in killing people, but absolutely.
Yes. And some other fun things that I heard or like wrote down about this conversation that I thought was interesting. Like, yes, they have an 18% chance of surviving the next 200 years without the Viltrumites' help. And then Cecil and Donald are doing these calculations and they're like, well, Mark coincidentally also has an 18% chance of living if he tries to fight him. And he's like, that's kind of ironic. I think it was 0% chance. I don't know where they got that 18 from. He was never going to be able to beat her at this state. But I agree. Like, this whole conversation was incredible. Like, it's just her trying to prep him for the Viltrumite. She's still being a little neutral. I mean, she's still being aggressive, but she's not like threatening Mark at this point. And it even goes on to say where Cecil gets a call that there's a big ass Kraken about to destroy
a cruise ship.
So Mark's going to go save him. And Anissa wants to watch because she wants to see what the great Nolan's son is capable of. Mm-hmm. And this scene was also fucking amazing because Mark does okay. Like, it wasn't bad. He was hitting, but he was getting hit back. And she starts to see that some people are dying. Mm-hmm. And she just looks at the Kraken and speed blitz right through her head and just shakes off the blood because she's going so fast. It was incredible.
Shook it off. It was the momentum of her stopping.
Yes, the inertia of the blood just kept flying through. And she just speed blitzed it. Like, where's that 18% survival rate coming from Mark? She said 0%.
Yeah. I would have bought probably like five, but 18 does seem high little bit after what we've seen. But it was funny because we were watching with our roommate Alki, and of course the whole time Alki's just like, Mark, just fly through her. Like, it shouldn't be that hard. And he's just like struggling, and he's not really breaking the Kraken shell. But here's Anissa, who just does it in 1 second. You could hear the relief from Alki, just like, Jesus, finally someone just blows through its head. And
that Kraken was completely unrelated to the Kraken that the Atlanteans had, right? Different color themed. I think they called this one a
Kaiju, though.
Yes. Like, okay. So Kaiju has been mentioned in the past too. Omni-Man messed one up in season
one. The one that Mark fought, I think, was like an actual Kraken or like Kraken based monster.
That, I'm sure, will come back at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, the Atlanteans and all that stuff. Okay. But like, let's just continue with this, because after Anissa destroys the Kraken, they bring the ship to the closest island and they have their last like real conversation here. This is where she becomes to be aggressive for the first time, because Mark just is not humoring her. And at face value saying like, yes, like lying to her saying like, I'll go with you guys eventually, even though Cecil's in his ear saying, just agree, Mark, just agree. And he just keeps saying no, because
he doesn't want to be his hero. Dad.
Oh yeah. He doesn't want to be like Nolan. And just this whole scene was awesome, because like, she kicks shit out of him easily. She's messing with him and he tries to stop her. And she says, you dare interrupt your education. Like, it was just so cool. Cause she's just, I just loved her as a character.
Yeah. I mean, this whole fight, I love when someone gets the shit kicked out of them in this show. I'm wincing. It's animated and I'm still wincing as if it's like a live action. The pain really is brought out of me. And they do such a great job animating these fights. I don't know. Comic book readers are just very nitpicky, and I get that, because I read a lot of manga, and when it translates to anime and it doesn't work, I complain. But this is like so gruesome all the time. I love it. I don't care if it is our main character getting the shit kicked out of him. It's so great to see, to be honest.
When she picks him up in the air, and then like towards the end, like the last thing that she does to him, when she puts her feet on him and just pile drives him straight into the earth, into the sand, and it's like a meteor.
I also want to shout out the anime level speed, like how she was moving around. Like, it just felt like I was watching an anime with how fast she was.
To some anime, like the Viltrumites definitely can hang with some of the lower animes.
For sure. The main thing that I'm obviously looking forward to, after Mark is kind of still refusing to concede, he tests Anissa and just says, hey, I know your job isn't to kill me, so if you're going to do it, kill me. Yeah. And she backs off, but her job essentially here was to just warn Mark of another person who's going to come and won't be afraid to just kill anyone. So
do you think it's Krieg, or do you think it's a different one?
That's what I thought. I had it written down as, I think it's Krieg, but I don't want it to be.
I'm also way open to the idea of introducing more named Viltrumites, like make Krieg a later thing.
Like, if there's a gap, it's like, if Krieg's at the top, if there's a gap of someone between Krieg and Anissa, and that person is going to come, like, that's what I want to see.
Yes.
Ideally, in an ideal world. But I do think she was probably referring, but I feel like she would have said Krieg, because they've met, like,
Krieg,
and she
met Mark,
and she knows that they've met. So it's like, I feel like she would have been like, remember that guy Krieg who threatened you? Like, he's going to come back here. But he doesn't. Like, the way she words it makes me think it's going to be someone else.
I want like a dumb, overly jacked Viltrumite that's just there to mess shit up, kind of come in.
There was a second that I was like, they're going to send Omni-Man back to Earth, like way like more
like brainwashed.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But I don't think it was going to be that either. I just think it'll be someone we haven't seen yet that will be a Viltrumite.
Yeah, that's, I agree with that guess. All right, sad. We'll come back to her for the Alan scene a little bit, but.
And what's funny is for us watching this for the first time, like, our whole stress for episode 7 was mostly of, are Mark and Amber going to break up? Right. Like, we want them to break up. Like, we're just so focused on them. And then things are going well at their date, and we're just like, fuck, they're getting back together. And then this happens and we're like, it's not.
I'm a horrible person. I was rooting for Anissa to snap Amber's neck, because I want Eve and Mark to work out so badly, like more than anything for this show. I thought that fit into the shock value that Invincible does. Like, if she just came down and broke her neck, that would have been like the end of the pilot of the first episode, when Omni-Man shocked us all and killed everybody. Like, shocking shit happens in this show, so I was kind of expecting it, because when she was at that point, but.
Yeah, you were kind of hoping he would get like a Spider-Man killing.
Something like that to really, yeah. And then we wouldn't even feel bad about him getting with Eve.
You sold me that on the last podcast episode. I'm still waiting for that moment of One of Mark's love interests, I think, is going to die.
Now I'll die because it'll be Eve.
No. It could still be Amber. It'll be like one of those things where maybe the villain thinks that they're dating or has some like old information. And it's like, oh, even if you guys aren't dating, like, I'll still kill her and it's going to hurt you. Like,
and it definitely would, because this is the next scene after Anissa flies off. Mark goes back to Amber. He's all beat the shit up, and they finally have their full conversation that we've been rooting for, where it's not even like anything that Amber says is wrong. Like, she's just it's almost like she's being ethical about it, because she says if she makes Mark feel bad or miss doing his superhero duties, it's unethical on her part, but her life needs to matter too, even though she's just a human, quote unquote, compared to what Mark can do, all these great things. So I felt like this was a really well done breakup scene where I didn't walk away being like F Amber or thinking that it was unbelievable. Like, it was a very believable breakup scene to me.
Yeah. And Amber had never truly experienced the danger that Mark gets into in the day. Like, the closest she got was on campus with, I already forget
Sinclair's,
his yeah Sinclair yeah, and fight. But that was like your local villain of the week,
right,
kind of thing. Obviously plays a bigger role for the show, obviously, but this is someone that is capable of destroying the world, and mm-hmm. Amber is now seeing that for the first time and now can finally truly understand who Mark is as Invincible. And so I definitely
respect for her.
Love the scene. I thought it really did hit hard with their breakup, but I'm just happy it is finally over. That was a rocky relationship. I do like Amber a lot more still. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have any negative thoughts like I did in season one. Amber, I think, is a more real, down to earth person now who Mark can still rely on going forward, but I'm glad their relationship wise that they're done finally.
Totally agreed. On the board right now is Amber coming back next season.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Zazie Beetz. Like, I hope they bring her back, because I thought her voice acting was great in this breakup scene. So, like, she's a big A-list actor. It would be nice to have her back. But then again, how's that going to work with Eve? I don't know. Either way, I think
like
she'll be
three
back.
Episodes before she dies anyway.
That's true. I think she's primed to come back now then. Okay. Okay. A couple more things just for the end of episode 7. I think we're making good time here. Okay. So, to step away from Mark, there's a couple things that happen are... Rick, everything to do with Rick having his PTSD because of Sinclair, who turned him into a cyborg and dismembered him. Also, no more Ezra Miller, who that was like announced, like he was the voice of Sinclair last season, but not in this season, of course, because of all the behind the scenes stuff. But we get a couple of scenes with Donald having his identity crisis a little bit, but then Cecil goes on. Rick and Donald, but all these things are happening, mm-hmm. and we can talk about it as a whole, just because it's everything related to Sinclair's robotic program, where. Back to Donald, he's having his identity crisis at the same time Rick's freaking out about his PTSD. And finally, Cecil just tells him the real deal and lets him see that he's basically living Morty Mind Blowers, where he every time he dies, he just erases it from his head, because you're not supposed to live with that kind of trauma. And we find out that Donald was murdered 39 times and brought back to life each time with his just a little bit less of him human each time. And that really plays into his final confrontation with Rick, who's now becoming suicidal because he doesn't know how to deal with this trauma. So it was like, it's a good messaging, and I get it. Again, it's just, how much time do we really feel like talking about this?
Yeah, not much. The main reasons why I like this story is because it's come a long way and has become almost a full circle moment. And I mean that in terms of, like, one, Sinclair being a villain in season one who we never thought we'd see again, and here he is working for Cecil, and two, the whole mystery behind Donald and how he's been handling his trauma is now directly impacting and affecting Rick and being a good positive influence on how he should handle himself going forward. Those are all very nice plot points that I enjoy that this show has done for us, but again, like Luke said, it's just the love stories. I'm just not a lovey-dovey guy. I get it. They just all kind of they all just feel recycled for the most part. Like, I did pick out like the uniqueness of each one, like Robot being a former robot and being a human and trying to be with a Curse Girl. And here we have a human who was killed, basically brought back in pieces to become a cyborg. All unique plots, but just at the end of the day, it's a love story that we can move on from.
Yeah, it'll get better, hopefully.
Yeah, I truly believe it will. Like, I think Rick will definitely become Well, now I'm going to say, I think he will become a Guardian at some point.
That makes sense. That could definitely work. How about with Donald too, or he would just stay with Cecil?
I think he'll just stay with Cecil behind the scenes, just keep doing the behind the scenes stuff. But his purpose feels much greater. But now I'm going to be curious if Donald is going to want himself to see these, like, the next time he dies, like, would he not want to see it again? I feel like it helps him by seeing the times that he's died.
No, I think he's done with having his memories erased.
You think?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see.
Also, you mentioned it, and I forgot to mention it earlier, how Sinclair was, or I guess Cecil has Sinclair in prison. And when they were trying to figure out solutions to Anissa, he calls Sinclair and says, how quickly will your robot army be ready? He's like, not ready at all. So that's going to come back, obviously.
They got to be strong enough to
talking about for a
hold
while.
Their own against the Viltrumite, it sounds like. Like, the goal would be to at least have a couple of them be able to take on one Viltrumite.
Yeah, and that's fine. Like, they planted the seeds well for that. And we kind of predicted that forever ago, I think. Mm. I don't even, that might have even been season one.
I feel like, that. For sure, especially knowing at how early on how important just side villains are.
Everybody, yeah. Okay, so to take us to the end of episode 7, after Mark breaks up with Amber, he goes home and Debbie and Oliver are being threatened by Angstrom, who we haven't seen in a minute here, at least in a meaningful scene. And we'll put a pause in that because we're going to directly talk about that at the beginning of the next episode. Then the post-credit scene happens, which, again, Anissa is the main part of this, and she's telling Krieg, she's reporting on what just happened with Mark, who he's not satisfied. But coincidentally, at the at this time, Alan the alien, Seth Rogen's flying right by their ship, and he doesn't know. I don't know if he's specifically looking for them. I know he's looking for the prison.
I think he was just
planet.
In the general area of the prison.
Sure.
I don't think he knows that. Like, I don't think he assumed that it was like a ship moving around constantly. I think he just had a general location and just.
Well, no, they take him to it on the ship. That's not the ship. That's not the prison.
Is it not?
I think they just grab him and take him. And I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
Because Omni-Man's still held captive there, but it's also like,
I think there was a skip in between the end of this scene.
So you think it's a planet still?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. But either way,
yeah.
The Viltrumites, I guess Anissa goes out to confront Alan and take him in as a prisoner. And it's awesome to see that he definitely would have held his own. If not, it seemed like he was actually a little bit stronger. Mm-hmm. Did not expect him to be that fucking strong, which is awesome. But then he fake loses to get captured and taken to prison.
Yeah. It felt like, honestly, after Anissa's hot introduction,
yeah,
that she would have lost this fight. If Alan had not been holding his punches and not trying to get captured, I genuinely believe Alan would have won that fight, which, not great for Anissa, because we just had that great introduction and I wanted to see her keep being a badass. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I love it for our boy Alan the alien.
We need more fighters on our side.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, are just so strong
right now. It's legitimately just Mark, and Alan just crossed that threshold of being able to be part of something bigger.
And he would mess up Mark right now.
Oh,
easily.
After seeing this, I'm on the page that, he would.
Okay, let's just flow right into episode 8, because this is what we've been building up to for the entirety of season 2 with Angstrom Levi, aka Kang of this universe, just building as the multiversal threat who can portal hop all across these dimensions, and he is now threatening Mark's home. He's threatening his half-brother and his mom. And that's how episode 7 ends and how episode 8 begins. And this is just, there's just so much to talk about. Like, this is going to be the majority of the rest of the podcast. Of course it is, because this is like what we've been leading up to, but there's so many little moments, and it's going to be hard to talk about it all because the amount of dimensions he flies through, the amount of Easter eggs I've been seeing on Twitter, the amount of Easter eggs we ourselves picked up, the amount of theories that can come from all of this. There's going to be a lot. We'll try and be concise in what we can. And you know, we're not source material readers, so we don't know how much of this is actual spoilers and how much we're just going to be guessing. But basically, in the beginning, after he comes home, he tries to speed blitz Angstrom, and Angstrom hates him. Like, he blames him for his accident, all this stuff. He doesn't even, and at this point, Mark doesn't even remember him, right?
Yeah.
So that pisses him off even more. Kind of,
oh,
like,
you're that guy.
Yeah. It's kind of like Jamie Foxx in Spider-Man 2, where he didn't really remember him as Electro, all that stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, he gets even more mad and pissed. So he sends him to his first dimension after Mark tries to speed blitz him, and which is the talking dinosaur dimensions, which was just funny because they're just talking about eating him, and they're like, "Egad, it speaks." Like,
yeah,
they're just
intelligent.
Like,
he can fly without wings, invisible wings. Like, that was great. The One thing I definitely want to shout out during this fight is just how well Angstrom was at using his portals, because it's not just as simple as, okay, he can look at someone and send them away. Like, he has to physically get them through the portal in order to send them away. So I thought the creativity level of how he was using his portals was just amazing. So like one instance, he throws a knife at Debbie and Mark has to obviously catch the knife to save her life. And at that moment, portals, he throws a portal. Yeah. And then there's another time where he kind of fakes Mark out with a portal and then Mark flies up to avoid it.
And
but then
he's in. Yeah.
You know, so I just thought it was just such a creative way of showing off Angstrom's powers, because we did know that he was broken, but the fact that he does have to conjure a portal does make it a little bit more balanced. But the fact that he was just toying with Mark was just amazing, I thought. And obviously all the different dimensions that he goes through, like I have some of them written down, like dinosaurs, Agent Spider.
I got most of these. We're going to talk through them just because it's fun.
But I just want to definitely give kudos to the fact that how Angstrom was using his powers was just so cool.
Yeah, if you listen to this podcast, you obviously watch it, so we don't need to talk about the specifics of how he gets each portal. They fight. Like, all these things are happening. The important part is that there's a time dilation difference between certain dimensions. So sometimes when Mark goes through a portal for 2 minutes on Earth, it's time is passing, and that's going to be relevant for a couple of these. But either way, so we talked about the dinosaur one, which is great. The second one, which I was just so excited to see, was the knockoff Spider-Man. I think it's Agent Spider is what his name is. He's got the big A on him. This caused a lot of talk around the internet, naturally, for a couple of reasons. One, it's so clearly Spider-Man because he's fighting Prof Ock, which is Doc Ock. But there's a comment that Agent Spider says, which is, oh, like, don't worry, I know you're from a different dimension, like I just got back from an adventure like that, talking about across the Spider-Verse, because I think this is all canon where this Agent Spider is a real character and they have these interactions. So it's basically just a really cool fourth wall break fan moment. And I also know that Spider-Man's in the actual comic, but that was never on the table for the show because of copyright issues. So this is the best we're gonna get, and I was still so excited. Like, it was Spider-Man.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. The fact people again just will complain about anything. The fact that they even gave us a bone like this, people should just be thankful for. Who cares if it wasn't actually Spider-Man? Only comic book readers are going to be upset by it, because maybe, sure, in the comics it was actually Spider-Man that he meets, but this was as good as you can get without breaking those copyright laws. And I thought it was beautifully done.
Do you have the voice actor's name for this? Because remember, okay. So to add to this, if you didn't know, the person that they had voicing Agent Spider is like a very famous Spider-Man voice actor. He's a cartoon voice actor all over the place. Like, I'm pretty sure
Josh Keaton. Yeah. He was like the Spectacular Spider-Man. Like that,
yep. He was in the Spider-Verse, like, as a voice. Yeah. He was Hercules from Disney. Hercules,
yeah.
There was a couple more people. Look him up. It was a great grab for them. Like, this was something that they all thought fans would really like, and I loved it.
I didn't even process the fact that they did a Marvel pool and a DC pool with Batman. Like, I didn't even think that they were jump. I just conglomerated it all as like, oh, superheroes meeting. But like, he went to Marvel and DC, which is so cool.
And people are claiming, I think it was the writer has been saying that wasn't Batman, but it was so obviously Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever you want to say, to keep yourself legally sound. Sure.
The only difference that I saw from that scene was that instead of it being the cape that Mark's talking to for Batman in that scene, he's talking like it's the wrist gauntlet of the bladed gloves that Batman usually wears. So it's like definitely Batman.
Yeah.
I think he's just being an asshole for sure. Mad Max, great, because we just watched that.
Oh,
movie.
Yeah. So here's some of the other ones that you just, okay. So I guess that the Spider-Man and the Dinosaur one was like the first couple of the universe he goes to, and we're seeing flashes to Angstrom also talking to Debbie and Oliver, I guess. One thing I wanted to bring up now is that Angstrom said this is the only verse that he's ever come across Oliver in. And Oliver is a direct, it's a direct result of Nolan and Mark's relationship. So basically this Mark that we're viewing is like the most special Mark across all the universes.
Yeah, because I mean, he mentions, you know, in most of those universes, you and your dad team up, and I'm sure his dad in those universes doesn't, again, still just views Debbie as a pet, never really loved her. But this is the one where he loved and was so devastated by his own actions that he actually had to leave, which probably never happened in any other universe. And then not only did he leave the planet without destroying it or taking it over, he meets up with another woman, or, you know, female alien that he can consort with and have a child with. So just emphasizing the fact that this mark is special, and it kind of goes into exactly the whole Angstrom storyline as well. With in episode one of this season or whatever it was, Angstrom is hunting Mark for the purpose of recruiting him to be a good guy. He's like, you are a special case. Like, you never happen in all these universes, but here you are being good. I want to recruit you. And there is a scene here where, you know, Debbie's talking to him and he's remembering that Mark wasn't the one that caused his accident. It was him. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment for me that I genuinely thought Angstrom was going to be good, reminiscing on that memory of him saving Mark and then kind of maybe realizing that he was. But then it kind of starts blending with all the other memories of other Angstroms that they have with Mark. And those 99% memories trump the 1% memory that he has of him being good. So no matter what, he was always pretty much destined to hate Mark to this extreme. And it obviously is an extreme because of how Mark reacts.
Yeah. And perfect segue into me just one statement describing these quick clips that we get, because yeah, like he gets pissed at Mark. So he starts sending him through all these different dimensions. But we also get a flash of all like what you're referring to, where all these different universe glimpses where he hates Mark and what Mark specifically did to Angstrom. Mm-hmm. So like the first one we see, which is going to be important. I know this is a little bit of a spoiler for future seasons, but I'm sure it's not a big enough spoiler for anybody to actually care. But the yellow and black with the cape suit Mark that we first see that comes in and murders his kid, which was fucking crazy. That Mark is for sure going to be coming back and it's going to be an important part. I don't know if it's end game or just like middle season, but pay attention to the return of that Mark eventually, because he's going to be important.
I just love evil Mark so much, because you can still see that like good Mark in him, the way he like kind of talks to these people. It's like Angstrom, my guy. Funny, like you look like shit. Yeah, he's like funny, but he's still so ruthless. Like, I think that is just such a twisted level of evil that I love, and I'm so ready for Mark to clash with these other personas.
So then another universe, Mark kills Angstrom's wife. Another universe, Mark's murdering that's when he speed blitzes the heads off the policeman and leaves. That was a pretty cool moment. Another one where everybody's like in jail and Mark's just walking by and slashing heads down the line. And then another one where him and Omni-Man cause like a dystopian version of Earth. Either way, you're seeing all these reasons why Angstrom, like you're saying, is the 99% trumps the 1% of the good memories he has of Mark. So it just pisses him off. But it all ends with, and I'll let you talk about this scene, because I didn't even notice it the first time we saw it, but when he brings Mark back, he hits him with like the Fortnite
thing. Yeah, Mark comes out one of the portals with like a sniper rifle. I didn't even catch this the first time, and I only saw it through Twitter, and I genuinely thought it was like Photoshop, because people were like, oh, look at this Fortnite call out in Invincible. I totally thought it was a joke, but it wasn't. It was like a legitimate sniper from Fortnite, which is so
he's
cool.
He's in it. He's
yeah,
in it.
Because yeah, like he is already a character in the game. So it's just like, it's just so, awesome. It's writing itself basically, which is just so cool. We like Fortnite here. We'll approve of Fortnite on this.
But after all these times, Mark's been thrown through these dimensions. He's starting to like figure out Angstrom's tricks. That's when you brought it up already. One of his more creative ways he gets Mark to fly through to another dimension after talking to him again on Earth is he throws the knife at Debbie. And this is where Mark gets sent to the zombie dimension. And this is the second time we've seen the zombie dimension this season.
I really was hoping that they would make like a Walking Dead reference. I feel like that would have been the cherry on top just like, where's Rick at or something, you know?
That one doesn't last long and there's nothing to take from there. But the fact that they showed the zombie thing twice, maybe that'll come back at some point. But then while Mark is being thrown through these universe, Debbie tries to, I think this is the part where we're starting to see like Debbie tries to attack Angstrom with the knife or whatever and slashes him. Then he fucking goes over and snaps her arm in half. And it's just
one of those moments where I looked away from the screen and just screamed a little bit. I was like, oh my God. Like, again, it's animated, but it's just so well animated. You see her bones sticking out. It's gushing blood.
And this is the part where Mark's away for the longest duration of time, where the time dilation is like long for where he goes. He's around the campfire for a second. We'll talk about that in a second. But right before Angstrom snaps Debbie's arms, he does tell her that in a lot of fucking universes, you join Nolan and Mark, which I didn't see that coming at all, where she actually is in with them.
I didn't see it coming, but when he said it, it's like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Because he's obsessed with Nolan and Mark, of course she would do she would follow her heart, even if it's evil, and, you know, go with them. So it's just so messed up. Like what Angstrom has seen and been through, it's It's terrible.
Yeah. And this is the next and I guess last time he gets TP'd through a bunch of things back to back to back, where we see Mark around this campfire. Me and Dave both didn't recognize the reference, but it was probably obvious to some of you guys. So if you know, just let us know, because we didn't know who he was. I thought it was like a South Park, like humanized version, because it looked like...
It's like a scene in Family Guy that it reminds me of, but the scene in Family Guy, I think, is playing on what...
That is based on, yeah, referencing, yeah.
But probably. I'm not 100% sure.
And then some of the other last dimensions we'll talk about are just like, there's that caveman dimension where they're actually really strong. We see a dimension where we see the villain that the Guardians were fighting when the Sequid scene was happening. That happens for a second. We see the Batman moment, and then we see the Mad Max moment. So there's just a bunch of cool ass pop culture references, crossovers, and they can come bring them back at any point now because they're established canon. They could leave them alone and they were just cool moments. Either way, this is one of the coolest animation things I've ever seen. Just like this whole sequence of Angstrom versus
they're
Mark
punching him through the portal, and it's like segueing perfectly. It looks so good.
Yeah, because Mark finally snaps once he gets back, and he's pissed because he sees his mom's arm destroyed, like just in half. So he's flying Angstrom through all these portals, and they're just going through these dimensions, and they end up, I'm just gonna use it because I love it, a Dune-like planet. They end up basically on Dune, where there's nothing but sand and like some remnants of old buildings, and this is where it finally happens. And I think this is an iconic moment in the books, in the comic book. Mark snaps and just beats the absolute shit out of Angstrom to the point where he eventually kills him, and it's just a bloody mess. And it's also important to know that Angstrom's body was stronger, and like he was physically stronger than a normal human, and he told Mark that earlier. And that's what eventually Mark goes on to say is, the name of the episode is, I thought you were stronger. And it's because he just thought he could let loose and finally get his revenge, but he ends up getting his first purposeful murder.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a brutal scene from so many different angles. One, the fact that Mark is actually killing his first person, and then that segues into him not wanting to become his father, but again, now that he's killed a person, that makes him one step closer to becoming his father. Mm-hmm. It's just so brutal. I really feel for Mark here. He did the right thing, obviously. Like, Angstrom was going to torture his mom and his brother until the end of time. Like, he was just not going to stop. And Mark, I know he's a good person. He doesn't want to kill. And I'm not vouching that you should go out and kill your enemy, but this seems like a scenario that definitely merited death.
100%. He's trying to make himself feel better. I had no choice. All this, I don't even think you need to take it that far. Like, he was a clear supervillain.
Yeah.
That was going to threaten everybody, you know, multidimensional. I think it was.
And
just
Mark even had offered himself to just, if you kill me, just leave them alone. And he says, no, I'm not going to do that. And what else can you do? I mean, I love the parallels that this has with, it might have been the same episode. Was it not? No, it was probably episode 8 of season 1, but still, just the fact on how Omni-Man was brutally beating the shit out of Mark, and the way that Omni-Man, after beating the shit out of Mark, who's barely alive at this moment, he's looking at his gloves. They're covered in his blood. Mark's doing the same thing here. He's looking at his gloves. Like, I'm pretty sure the blood stains were, I think I saw a tweet where they were identical. It's
incredible.
Yeah. And it's so perfect because, again, and we've been saying it too, the whole first half of the season was Mark fighting against Cecil, fighting against all these outsiders, telling him that, you know, you don't want to become your father. And he's been this whole time forcing these people to see him not as his father, but here he goes doing something that his father would have done in a fit of rage. And again, I get that Mark should feel these ways, and he has every right to feel upset with himself. Mm-hmm. But the bad over trumps that. I mean, the fact that like Angstrom would have gone to any length to kill him and his family, this was the only option, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I mean, he's the main character. He's a good guy. Like, of course he has to react this way. Otherwise it would have been weird.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
Yeah. So this is going to be the most complicated part. I'm not complicated to explain, but I don't know if I got the right grasp of what was really happening here. After Mark's done freaking out and he flew around realizing there was nothing on this planet for him, he was basically stranded in this universe by himself. That's when a group of the Guardians from the future, 20 years after the Angstrom fight happened, come and save Mark. And I don't feel super confident talking about this scene, because is that, is it, was it, what the future of Mark's Earth would play out to be if he didn't get returned to Earth was what happened to these Guardians, which made them go back and search in the past in a different dimension to save him, to prevent them from becoming that way, right?
Yeah, so I think just, I don't know if it, how coincidental this all is, but yes, like, whereas we saw him going to, like, other dimensions, like, zombie dimensions, things like that, I think this was just, like, the future. Like, this was
the future.
A dimension of the future. Like, in this dimension, it's just a continuation of what happened where he left, and then I guess something horrible happened.
Right.
Because he's not around to save what happened, because obviously the planet's just completely nothing at this point. So we know it's Earth and it's completely covered in sand, like you said. So I'm wondering, like,
I don't think this planet is the futuristic planet. I could be wrong. I thought they portaled from somewhere else to come save him.
Hmm.
But I could be, because you see the green flash and a portal, that could be them jumping around the planet, but it could be them coming from a different dimension. Like, I think everything you're saying about the Guardians that we're seeing is correct. I just don't think we need to marry it to the idea that this world is their world. I think they were saving him from this world to prevent their world from happening.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I'm with you, I think. No matter what, those Guardians had experienced the timeline where Mark ended up going through the portal, experiencing 20 years, and it might not have necessarily been on that planet because we don't know if that was actually Earth. You're saying they could have just been hopping dimensions as well.
To looking, rewrite their past. Basically.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So I think
I'm on that page.
I feel way better about that. Thank you. You wanted me to bring this up, and I'll say this now. We don't necessarily recognize all these Guardians that we got there.
Yeah,
there
were two new ones.
We got Eve, Robot, Monster Girl, Bulletproof, Bulletproof, and then two randoms. That was like a hammer user.
Yeah,
like
Thor.
Yeah, I think they're going to be introduced for sure soon.
Like, okay, now I guess taking this a step further, do you think that, like, how definite is this future going to be? Like, my interpretation is Immortal wasn't there. Black Samson wasn't there.
Right.
Were they dead?
Well, I think,
and, like,
if Mark's gone, I think all the Viltrumites come and just enslave Earth, and they're probably just survivors, and, like, just like underground survivors trying to not die. So yes, I think it's very possible Immortal gets murdered by Viltrumites. Like, any Guardian we don't see was probably killed.
But then, now taking a step further, do you think that means that there there's a chance that when we come back to, like, our timeline, you know, Mark's back in his timeline, whatever, that by the end of Invincible, Immortal and Black Samson are both, like, dead? Or do you think...
Well, no, I think the fact that Mark being there is going to change everything.
Change everything, okay.
But they could also die. I hope some people die, but...
Two things that I have about meeting the future Guardians. First one being that I thought it was a little ridiculous. Again, we've been emphasizing how much we do want Eve and Mark to end up together, and I'm definitely a full advocate of that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little ridiculous of Eve to kind of trauma dump
right at the end, right before he goes to the portal.
She knows the importance of what time
Mark left.
Well, I mean, she just knows the importance. Like, Robot comes up to her afterwards. It's like, you just risked all of the timeline, basically, to get those out. And it's like, okay, so one, you should have been better about that. And two, you're going to do this all over the fact that your past self had a crush on Mark, who he himself wasn't even aware of you had a crush on him, essentially. Like, he's just that ignorant and, like, just dumb with, like, love and relationships that he didn't recognize it. And now you're going to just trauma dump all of this onto him when you also know that him and Amber in the past, like, had just broken up and then you got immediately sent through the portal. So you're just, like, coming out of the future to save Mark, but then you're also just going to tell him, like, I love you. You got to go back and now tell the girl that you don't even know loves you, whether you do love her or you don't, and I'm risking this all for the timeline. Like,
yeah.
Again, I love the idea of Eve and Mark being a thing, but it just felt like, what are we doing? Why did you have to say this?
It does work out because Mark doesn't say anything to her.
That only works out as if they do end up being together.
Yeah, agreed.
Which I think will happen, but it's still just like, Eve's smarter than that.
It felt a little weak. I totally agree because, yeah, like, also, we don't know any rules about, what do you mean? Like, Robot saying, don't change the timeline. Well, them doing this is changing the timeline. So it's like, I don't know, you throw that out, or, like, is it like Marvel, the MCU, where when you do this, like, you split timelines? Mm-hmm. So like it, that time, their timeline still happened, but this is just redoing a whole new timeline.
So the new timeline can be like safer. Yeah.
And they can both coexist. I don't know how Invincible is going to play it. Either way, I agree with you. I'm trying to play devil's advocate. I agree. It was a little weak.
I didn't really understand it. And then it's followed up by him seeing Eve.
Mm-hmm. So let's just do that because.
Well, let me say my one other thing that I had a question. I brought this up to you during the episode as well. Is the whole Rex robot thing. So obviously when they show up, it's robot, like in robot form, and
Rudy's inside.
And we know that Rudy looks and is supposed to look like Rex because he's part of his DNA, whatever. Rudy comes out of robot.
And they call him Rex.
And they call him Rex. They don't call him robot or Rudy. They call him Rex, which I don't know. I don't want to say that that was a mistake.
No.
But it only just confused me because it's like, okay, he was talking like robot. He was acting like robot. And then all of a sudden you're going to refer to him as Rex. So like,
yeah, that is
the thing is it going to be at some point they combine, like if robot has a fully functional, you know, robot human brain and Rex has half a brain, like just fuse them together and make them one person, like kind of thing. I'm just pulling shit out of my ass.
That would be cool because then he would be robot and shoot explosive.
Okay, well now I was just saying I was anti against that, but now I'm kind of in that because robot hasn't really proven himself to be
no that's
useful.
Not true. On the Sequids, like he did the concussive blast, he's always like techie important.
Yeah, but if you also throw in Rex,
I agree.
So that's I just thought it was interesting that they referred to him as Rex when it was clearly robot and Rudy.
Yeah, I remember you bringing that up and I don't have any answers, so that's something we'll definitely just look to the internet after and see what they think. But that's two great observations. Either way, these future Guardians are gonna have to play an important part, maybe not their specific versions, but the idea of that future timeline, all that's going to be important.
How does bulletproof's bitch ass survive all that time?
Honestly, I have no
being here. Only bulletproof.
Okay, so we're almost done here. The part that happens directly after Mark gets sent home is Cecil went and collected Debbie and they fixed the house up, whatever. She's brought to the hospital. So Mark goes to the Pentagon and sees his mom. They cry together. Like, this is just like a healing moment. Probably nothing to dissect there. But the conversation, you covered most of it already, is after Mark sees his mom, he goes to the roof and he's still super sad about everything that just happened. And Cecil tells him over and over that you're not your father. And I was like, that's Maddox right there, Christopher Maddox.
That's what things like this give me hope for Cecil, because season one, it was all like, who can we trust?
I'm all in on Cecil.
Yeah. It's just the only thing is that we said it before. He's kind of like the Viltrumites in a sense, where he's willing to sacrifice thousands for the greater good of humanity. So actually, it's cool that I'm making that connection, because it's like they have the same mindset, but they're enemies, you know?
Yeah. What if he's a Viltrumite?
Yeah. What if he just switches? It's like, what if he just comes to his senses? He's like, you know what? The Viltrumites actually make a good point. And they're just.
He's the primer Viltrumite. He's a Viltrumite sleeper. He's going to just bust out his suit soon and just murder him. Okay. So a couple things we got to talk about before we get to the prison planet. We'll send it off with that. We have after Angstrom dies, and I hope I'm not mixing up when this kind of happens. Mark's still grieving a little bit.
Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. I also do not think Angstrom is dead. I'm going to put it on the podcast now. I think
like that version of him is not dead.
I don't know how complicated I can get to it. I just think that Angstrom, the villain, is going to come back. I mentioned it to you off pod as well, that if he's supposed to be this world's Kang, you know, Marvel, they've killed the Avengers killed Kang hundreds of times. He always comes back. I'm just wondering if there's maybe room for some kind of ability like that in Angstrom's repertoire. Maybe he went to another universe that he hadn't quite contacted with yet and was just like, hey, do this experiment, but it's gonna fuck you up, but at the same time, like, we'll be just
I kind of agree, because like I said the spoiler, that dark Invincible or whatever, that Invincible cape's important. How is he gonna jump without an Angstrom
I think Angstrom must be the key.
I mean that's a perfect person to just bring back in four seasons.
And again, if they don't, I'm not gonna be butthurt. I just think that there is an opportunity to still somehow have Angstrom come back
for sure. So here's a fun thing that happens for like 2 seconds, where I'm excited to tell you who the voice actor was, because we didn't look it up. But if you remember, this is the second time this has happened in the entire Invincible show, where Mark's just flying around grieving and we step away from him to see this random scene with the mummy, the mummy Kahor, who is in like this tomb. And in season two right now, we have Jane, the characters Jane and Riley, who are going to search for the tomb. The one girl, the blonde hair girl, doesn't have powers. The other one does. She's super strong. She said she got it from like her grandmother or something. That's not the important part that I want to bring up, but these characters will probably come back.
Yeah. Especially if they have names. Like I didn't even catch that on my rewatch. I like kind of like hovered over to see if they have names.
Did you see who plays the voice actors?
I didn't look into it. I just saw the fact that they had names, and that made me realize that I think they're going to be big characters going forward.
Either way, when they get to the mummy tomb, he comes out and he's sexist. He's like, I can only possess a male. Like, what are you guys doing? Because they see like Jane's dad dead on the ground right there. And then before anything happens, Mark just being pissed and flying by fucks everything up. Mm-hmm. That's what happens in season one. If you remember, like there's this mummy was in season one. And
it looks familiar.
Mark is doing a random thing and him just his just being alive. And like he gets hit through like a building. I kind of forget, but he disrupts the mummy in the same way. So I think it's like a joke. It's going to be like a running joke that Mark just being alive on the planet keeps accidentally stopping this mummy. And eventually it's going to happen. It's going to be important.
And it's going to take over Mark.
That would work. That'd be sick.
Yeah. I think that could work too. Especially he's like, oh, you're the guy that keeps ruining me, trying to possess people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to possess you now.
There's going to be some payoff for it.
Oh, yeah. I think because he did look familiar. Like I wrote his name down again because I know it's going to pop up. So like I want to remember it. And
it was in a scene that long, though, is why we forget. Because it's like that. Yeah. So I think it's like a running joke.
That's amazing.
But guess who plays? And that you can't. No, well, he's also famous. I think he was the Gen V principal or the guy who ran the experiments that dies. I think that was him, Cahor. But Jane and Riley.
Oh, wait. Didn't Al give me a comment? Isn't one of them voiced by Azula? Or
no,
is that
no?
What was that from?
That was he thought Monster Girl sounded like Azula or something. I don't know. Either way, one of the Riley Jane girls is voiced by Chloe Bennett, she's famous. She's in like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's been in a bunch of things. The other one is voiced by a girl, Jackie from Yellow Jackets. Fallout, yeah, too, which is
that's
cool.
So, I honestly literally just went right to the name. I didn't even process the pictures. Like, I didn't even look at the pictures of, like, the actresses. I just went right to the names.
And it's funny because they said that was, like, a last-minute ad where they were just kind of around the studio and they came in and voiced this thing for 2 seconds. Like, that wasn't fully planned out to have them voice it, but they're two famous people for, like, two lines. Yeah, so anyway, Invincible disrupts it. But okay, before we get to the prison planet, the last thing is just the Eve and Mark conversation where she's there for him. She's listening, but he decides to not tell her yet, even though he was about to. And I'm kind of happy he didn't because that was way too quick to move on from Amber to her. I would have even felt bad about them getting together like that. But that goes back to what you were saying with like future Eve.
And I'll just reiterate it. The only way this works is if Mark and Eve actually end up together, which I do think will happen.
And I want them to slow burn it a little bit now that we're on the trajectory.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Yeah, I'm totally with you. It would have been weird for him to just come out and be like, I love you.
Yes, exactly. So,
and I think he knew that too.
All right, two more scenes here. Technically three, two and a half, we'll call it. The prison planet or ship, yet to be confirmed. We'll get back to you on that. But Nolan's first scene, and this is actually, I think, either the beginning of this episode or
the
okay, yeah. So Nolan is healed, and he's testing his body against these guards and these robots, and he's fucking everybody up. And Krieg comes in and notices that, okay, your body's back to the shape where you're going to be fit for execution, even though he then goes on to beat the shit out of him more because he hates Nolan for how Earth changed him. Mm-hmm. But either way, Nolan's back to being able to walk and all that stuff. So after Krieg beats the shit out of him, they take him back to his cell and then he passes Alan. And Alan's talking to him through his head, of course, like through their brain implant that he has. And he's like, I'll talk to you later. Skip to the final scene, the post-credit scene, where Alan's talking to him and Nolan wants him to leave Mark out of it. All these things where he's saying, like, I'm just going to let them execute me. Just leave my son out of it. He deserves peace. And whatever the catalyst is, I think Alan goes on to convince him, like, we're going to go to war. Like, we need your son's going to be involved, all these things. And then Nolan finally just breaks down. He's like, wow, like, I think I miss my wife. And it's just definitely going to go back and he's going to be a good guy, which, wow, imagine a year ago telling me that. I never would have believed
I don't even know how Debbie's going to react to if he does come back, which he will. When he does inevitably come back, I don't know how Debbie's going to react.
Is he just full good already?
Nah, I would say he's still learning what it means to be good and like what it still means to care for a life.
Yeah.
But at least we're on the path of he recognizes that life is life.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't just take that away from someone. So I don't think he's fully good. Like I just can't wait. I just don't.
Imagine him being on our side though. Like right off the get would be so like just Mark and Nolan. That's going to be what happens. They're definitely going to be just right on each other's team. It's going to be Allen, throw Allen in there, all the Guardians, Cecil's using Sinclair's Allen, army. Like, this is going to be fucking epic, dude. Yeah. It's going to be so epic. Get Anissa on our side. Let's fucking go.
The final season of the war that breaks out between the Viltrumites and just everyone else is going to be so epic. And yeah. I expect so many deaths, but...
And I might be making this up, but I thought... I heard 7 seasons. That could be something.
That sounds perfect to me, honestly. I wouldn't want any more and wouldn't want any less. Yeah. Like 7 seasons is always to me like a good, that is a full show. Like you don't need to go any more than that ever. Sometimes when you get to 10, it's just like Walking Dead. It's just like you're pushing it here.
Way too much, yeah.
And then way better than just having 2 or 3. So
yeah,
give me it.
Dude, that's pretty much your coverage. So like I said at the beginning, I want to end this with us talking. Now that we're through 2 full seasons, who are your top 3 favorite characters?
It's going to be generic and no order.
Mine, probably.
Yeah, probably. Mine's just going to be Mark, Omni-Man, probably Allen. I'll give it to Allen.
Oh, okay, so you're similar to me.
I'll give it to Allen.
I have Omni-Man 1, Allen 2, and then a tie between Anissa and Mark as 3.
Anissa would go to 4, probably. Yeah. Maybe
I love Anissa.
Eve's up there.
I was just gonna say Eve is probably in my top 5 too. So
Ballers.
Oh, there's so many good characters.
Yeah, I know. There's
dude.
So many good.
There's
characters.
So many good characters. Like Immortal would be like 10, like in the top. I don't know. He's kind of getting up there too. Yeah. Like I'm even starting to really love all the characters in this cast. It's incredible. Like there's so much to look forward to, and we're still in the pump up session of Invincible, where I think we're exiting like the.
Mark getting his ass kicked,
part one.
Totally.
Yeah. Like it's time to start growing. I think.
I mean, that was the whole conversation that him and his mom had at the very end was that like, he's moving on from college and he needs to start controlling himself and his powers. And if she doesn't.
Training arc, baby.
Yeah. And if she doesn't want that for him, then she can get the fuck out. But she, but she says, I want you to do what you want to do. And that's where.
And I'm guessing when season 3 starts, Oliver is going to be like a teenager.
Oh, please. I was hoping it would be by the end of this season, but I mean, they've been making comments about how
quick, I think her name's April. April was the babysitter, whatever. Yeah. She was making comments saying that everything's fast for him.
Like, yeah. He's learned quicker than anyone she's ever taught before. So,
well, that's it, man. Final thoughts. Anything else you want to add?
Nah, I just season 2 is definitely better than season 1. Mm-hmm. Probably it's just,
no slight on season 1 though.
Yeah, no. This, again, like I said at the beginning of the pod, this was a show that came up in a discussion about best storyline shows of all time. And this show's only been out for 3 years, not even. So
I have nothing else to add. This show rocks. We will be back for season 3 at some point in the future. They did say they've already been banking episodes like way quicker, at a way quicker pace than they did before. So it should not be as long as a gap. And hopefully they learn from the internet's reaction. No more gap breaks.
I would also be pleasantly surprised if they do like another, maybe not Adam Eve season 2, but like if they throw us another bone of just like a side, like I would be down to cover that too on the podcast if they did.
Omni-Man backstory.
Oh my God, yeah.
So that's going to do it for us, guys. If you like what you heard, give Binchtown TV a follow at any of the socials, you know, X, Instagram, YouTube, we're there. We post everywhere, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcast. Check it out. We have so much other content and there's a lot in the chamber. We have The Boys coming up. We got The Bear coming up. We have House of the Dragon coming up. I think we're still doing Survivor simultaneously. We got a lot cooking. There's a lot to listen. Go to BenchdownTV.com if you want a centralized spot to find all of our content there, or just search Binchtown TV anywhere you can find us. So that's going to be it. Once again, we are Binchtown TV and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.